Africa Live. Saying is, ain't nobody gonna do this for us but us. Talk about a Barack Obama. Don't even talk to me about Barack Obama. Let's talk about Marcus Garvey. You know what I'm saying? The question ain't whether we vote for white power and white face or white power and black face. The question is whether we will be an independent people or whether we remain colonized and oppressed until we are wiped out. This is African internationalism in action, y'all. Y'all need to get up on this. When we say we have to have power in our own hands, here we're talking about the African working class. What we can do is to have an organized capacity of the African workers in alliance with the poor peasants who takes state power for itself. Then we can begin to say we got justice in our own hands.
Africa Live.
Up these incredible African leaders that we've had. It's critical that as African people we strive to be like them. I'm talking about the Marcus Garveys. I'm talking about the Fannie Lou Hamers. I'm talking about the Malcolm X's, the Kwame Nkrumah's, and today we have Omali Eshetela.
Brothers and sisters, Africans at home and abroad, welcome to Africa Live.
Uhuru and welcome to Africa Live. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and on today we're going to be talking about the Democratic National Convention. We're going to be looking at some of the presentations made at that convention, and you know, talk about what's up with this thing. You know, what is it that we're looking at with the this convention. You know, this week the Democratic National Convention has happened. On next week, the Republican National Convention is going to be happening, and there's this whole process that's going on where this electoral process that is that Africans find themselves in the fray, particularly because of the campaign of Barack Obama. And it was in this Democratic National Convention where Barack Obama's nomination as the Democratic Party's candidate for president was made official. And we're going to be, I'm going to have on the line with me a little bit later on, Odion Osagyefo, who is the president of the African Internationalist Student Organization. We're going to be talking about this thing. One of the things that people talk about is how, you know, this targeting of the youth, particularly with Obama's campaign. So we're going to be talking with him on the air as well. I want to say before we start out, that this this radio station, this show that we're involved in right now, is not attempting to take a side between the Democratic and Republican Party. In fact, as we see it, there is no side to take. They're just two sides of the same coin. Both parties are parties representing the white ruling class, and regardless of the fact that Africans have through the period of time that we've been in the U.S. Have bounced between the two parties, depending on which one double-crossed us most recently. We recognize that both parties are, again, like the two sides of the same coin, both representing the white ruling class, and as representatives of the white ruling class, cannot represent the interests of the African working class, because those interests are diametrically opposed. They're directly opposed, you know, and so we want to start out, you know, with that understanding, because, sometimes people get this idea, well, if you're opposed to Obama, then you must be for McCain. But the reality is that being for Obama really is for McCain, because both of them are representing the same interests, different sectors of the same interests, but the interests of the same class altogether. Both would attempt to solve the crisis that is experienced by U.S. imperialism at the expense of Africans in this country and around the world, and other oppressed peoples around the world. So we're gonna be having that discussion on today, It's really interesting, looking at this convention, because the common theme here the common thread throughout the whole thing is everybody talking about the need to clean up America's face around the world. You had different people, including the vice president, talk about, do you remember when people used to trust us in the world, when people trusted America? Well, Barack Obama's going to be the one that brings back the ability for people to trust America, and basically the need to restore America on top of the world. And I think that's pretty significant. That's a statement of the crisis. And I would imagine that the theme of the Republican National Convention will also be centered around the question of bringing America to its place that it has enjoyed in the past of being able to dominate the peoples around the world in the old way, that's one thing I want to note going into this thing. We're gonna play some clips for you from the Democratic National Convention. The 4 days that the thing happened. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break and come back here on Africa Live on AhuaRadio.com.
Rally round the red, go.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have a guest on the line with us today, Comrade Odion Osagyefo, who is the president of the African Internationalist Student Organization. Uhuru, comrade.
Uhuru, comrade.
Yes. I'm good. It's good to have you on. And particularly talking about this thing, the Democratic National Convention. It's good to have you on in particular because, you know, there's all this motion, you know, and it's not like a motion that's something that Barack Obama created, but it's something that the Democratic Party is taking advantage of by putting Barack Obama out there. And in motion, you see a lot of young folk, you know. So it's good to have you here and have your perspective on the thing as the president of AISO.
Most definitely, comrade. Yeah, I want to say that I unite with what you just said. Yeah, we definitely see with this phenomenon of Barack Obama, the elevation of you know, young people as well that are trying to follow his lead, thinking that's the way to go. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be a good discussion.
yeah definitely. Well, okay, what we're gonna do, the first clip I want to play is from Michelle Obama. And you know, I want to say, you know, kind of preemptively, you know, I think it's important to understand, like, what, you know, these different folk were attempting to do with these presentations, because Michelle Obama, you know, in her presentation had the task really of painting a human picture of Obama, so that white people can find him acceptable. You know what I'm saying? I think her job in the presentation that she made was to try to make it so white, so he's like palatable for white people, so they can see him and be like, oh, I like this guy. He's all right. You know, you know what I'm saying? and then the other thing is to kind of overwrite, you know, the statement that she made earlier in the campaign, where she was talking about, when she was saying that this was the first time in her adult life that she was proud of America, you know.
Right.
So, you know, you had them two things there, you know. She got to try to fix those things. And so we got a couple of clips from her presentation. Let's check them out and see whether she succeeded in that task that she had there.
All right.
What struck me when I first met Barack was that even though he had this funny name, and even though he had grown up all the way across the continent in Hawaii, his family was so much like mine. He was raised by grandparents who were working class folks just like my parents, and by a single mother who struggled to pay the bills just like we did. And like my family, they scrimped and saved so that he could have opportunities that they never had for themselves. And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're gonna do, that you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even if you don't agree with them. And Barack and I set out to build lives guided by these values and to pass them on to the next generation, because we want our children and all children in this nation. Willingness to work hard for them. And as our friendship grew and I learned more about Barack, he introduced me to the work that he'd done when he first moved to Chicago after college. You see, instead of going to Wall Street, Barack went to work in neighborhoods that had been devastated by the closing of steel plants. Jobs dried up. And Barack was invited back to speak to people from those neighborhoods about how to rebuild their community. And the people gathered there together that day were ordinary folks doing the best they could to build a good life. See, there were parents trying to get by from paycheck to paycheck, grandparents trying to get it together on a fixed income, men frustrated that they couldn't support their families after jobs had disappeared. You see, those folks weren't asking for a handout or a shortcut. See, they were ready to work. They wanted to contribute. They believed, like you and I believe, that America should be a place where you can make it if you try. And Barack stood up that day, and he spoke words that have stayed with me ever since. He talked about the world as it is and the world as it should be. And he said that all too often we accept the distance between the two and we settle for the world as it is, even when it doesn't reflect our values and aspirations. But he reminded us that we also know what the world should look like. He said, we know what fairness and justice and opportunity look like. And he urged us to believe in ourselves, to find the strength within ourselves to strive for the world as it should be. And isn't that the great American story? It's the story of men and women gathered in churches and union halls, in high school gyms, and people who stood up and marched and risked everything they had, refusing to settle, determined to mold our future into the shape of our ideals. And it's because of their will and determination that this week we celebrate two anniversaries, the 88th anniversary of women winning the right to vote and the 45th anniversary. And the 45th anniversary of that hot summer day when Dr. King lifted our sights and our hearts with his dream for our nation. And I stand here today at the cross currents of that history, knowing that my piece of the American dream is a blessing hard won by those who came by the same conviction that drove my dad to get up an hour early each day to painstakingly dress himself for work, the same conviction that drives the men and women I've met all across this country, people who work the day shift, then kiss their kids goodnight and head out for the night shift without disappointment, without regret. See, that goodnight kiss is a reminder of everything they're working for. The military families who say grace each night with an empty seat at the table. The servicemen and women who love this country so much, they leave those they love most to defend it. The young people across America serving our communities, teaching children, cleaning up neighborhoods, caring for the least among us each and every day. People like Hillary Clinton. Who put those 18 million cracks in that glass ceiling so that our daughters and our sons can dream a little bigger and aim a little higher. People like Joe Biden, who has never forgotten where he came from and never stopped fighting for folks who work long hours and face long odds and need someone on their side again. All of us driven by the simple belief that the world as it is just won't do. That we have an obligation to fight for the world as it should be. And that is the thread that connects our hearts. That is the thread that runs through my journey and Barack's journey and so many other improbable journeys that have brought us here tonight, where the current of history meets this new tide of hope. And you see, that is why I love this country. life, in my own small way, I've tried to give back to this country that has given me so much. See, that's why I left a job at a big law firm for a career in public service, working to empower young people to volunteer in their communities, because I believe that each of us, no matter what our age or our background or our walk in life, each of us has something to contribute to the life of this nation. And it's a belief that Barack shares, a belief at the heart of his life's work. See, it's what he did all those years ago in Chicago, setting up job training to get people back to work and after school programs to keep kids safe.
So this is that's just a clip of the speech, you know, which had a lot of stuff in it that that was really trying to do a couple of things. Like I said, paint a human face of Obama for white folk, paint a face of Obama that they could deal with, you know, and to really exert her patriotism, to make them know that she bleeds red, white, and blue, and the comment that she made before about, you know, this being the first time she is proud of America in her adult life, was misunderstood, that she bleeds red, white, and blue, and all these types of things. You know, what do you think about that, Odeon?
I unite 110%. I think even the reference to her meeting this guy with a funny name, you know,
right?
even something like that—that's just to make this guy more acceptable to white folk, you know. And talking about values and loving the USA, you know, a country with, you know, we can't even begin to get into the history of the U.S. state, you know, and it's horrible crimes to African people, but yet she loves this country.
Yeah.
So, they're both U.S. patriots, and, you know, what happened to her comment, exactly what you said, you know, this is the first time ever in her adult life that she was proud of her country. That, I mean, that was all liquidated at that convention in a single speech, right? I mean, that it's hard to believe them. You know, even if, you know, I don't think it even matters if whether they believe what they're saying is true or not. It's the mere fact that they're saying it, and they're, it's a campaign that's built on deception and lies, and not an accurate reality of material reality of African people.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, the thing is, you know, I think that even if they're being honest, and she probably loves America to death. She probably, you know, yeah, she probably, when she cuts herself doing whatever she does, she might have some blue, red, and white blood come out of her. You know, that's possible. You know, I mean, they in the camp with a bunch of U.S. patriots, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're trying to be the president of the United States, or you know, then you got to be a U.S. patriot. You got to be somebody who's down with all the vile, the terrible kind of things that America does to Africans and other people around the world. And the thing is, you know, shit, I think the statement it was a little too nice for America. You know, I mean, the whole idea of, you know, being proud of America at all. I mean, I ain't never been proud of America in my adult life. I ain't never been proud of America in my life that I can think of, you know, because the reality is America. And if there was a time as a child that I may have been proud of America, it's because I was misinformed, you know, because America lives at the expense of African people. America builds itself at the expense of African people, and if you are proud of America, there's something wrong with you, you know.
Most definitely, something's definitely wrong. And it's like you said, if one time someone was, it's because they've been, you know, it's that miseducation that we've received in these colonial institutions, these schools, you know.
And yeah,
the material reality is America, it only exists because it's a parasite, and it lives off of our resources, human and material. And that's not a country that I would never love. That's not a country that I would ever fight under any banner for.
Yeah.
You know, she made reference to military families and what have you, you know, and that seat missing at the table as if it's a good thing to be in the military and to go around the world and do these horrible crimes.
Yeah.
For the state. I mean, you know, it's that thing, you know, she's just going back to the whole values, you know, and U.S. patriotism and fighting under the flag and, you know, and the reactionary white folk love to hear that, you know?
Yeah, they do.
Particularly from a black family, so.
But the question is whether they believe it, you know, whether the white folk believe it. And that's, that's a tall order there. You know, you talking about a whole history that you, they got to try to get white folks over. You know, if they going to get in the office, you know, they got a whole history of this anti-African ideology, you know, that is throughout the U.S., you know. I don't know whether she convinced him or not. I tell you what, she convinced me that she's a U.S. patriot and that he's a U.S. patriot. And I was convinced before that speech, but I see that as problematic. But, you know, for African to be a U.S. patriot, you know.
Something's wrong with you if you're a U.S. patriot and you're an African. I mean, seriously, there's something seriously wrong with that. I think his candidacy, we can get into this further, but he liquidates the whole national liberation of African people. He thinks everything's okay. And it's the material reality is most likely what shapes his worldview. You know, he's petty bourgeois, so, you know, that's why he has the worldview that he has, you know?
Right.
And he liquidates the whole liberation struggle of our people and what we still have to do.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But, you know, I want to look at, you know, some of these other presentations that were made at the DNC. Again, this is Africa Live on thewhoradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and I have with me Odiano Sajafo, who is the president of AISO, the African Internationalist Student Organization. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. And you can participate in the discussion that we're having here. You can call the U.S. number, country code 001-727-565-1599, or you can call the UK number, which is country code 44, and it's 020-8133-6629. You can call us through Skype anywhere in the African world. Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase, or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. Let us hear from you about how you experienced the Democratic National Convention. I want to go to the second day, because on the second day, you had this presentation made by Hillary Clinton, you know, who was involved in this serious battle that got real nasty with Barack Obama trying to get the Democratic nomination for presidency. And like I said, it got real nasty. So she had a real mess to kind of fix here in this presentation. Like, there's this big split, you know, in the Democratic Party between her camp and Obama's camp, you know. And like I said, there was a lot of nasty thing said. The thing was drawn out in the kind of way that helped to develop a real kind of rift in the DC in the Democratic Party. And it's interesting checking out this speech. I'm gonna play what I want to do is play a couple of clips from that, and we're gonna talk about it. So here is Hillary Clinton on the second day of the Democratic National Convention.
Now, this will not be easy. Progress never is. But it will be impossible if we don't fight to put a Democrat back into the White House. We need to elect Barack Obama, because we need a president who understands that America can't compete in the global economy by padding the pockets of energy speculators while ignoring the workers whose jobs have been shipped overseas. We need a president who understands we can't solve the problems of global warming by giving windfall profits to the oil companies while ignoring opportunities to invest in the new technologies that will build a green economy. We need a president who understands that the genius of America has always depended on the strength and vitality of the middle class. Barack Obama began his career fighting for workers displaced by the global economy. He built his campaign on a fundamental belief that change in this country must start from the ground up, not the top down. And he knows that government must be about we the people, not we the favored few. And when Barack Obama is in the White House, he'll revitalize our economy, defend the working people of America, and meet the global challenges of our time. Democrats know how to do this. As I recall, we did it before with President Clinton and the Democrats. And if we do our part, we'll do it again with President Obama and the Democrats. Just think of what America will be as we transform our energy economy, create those millions of jobs, build a strong base for economic growth and shared prosperity, get middle-class families the tax relief they deserve. And I cannot wait to watch Barack Obama sign into law a health care plan that covers every single American. We know that President Obama will end the war in Iraq responsibly, bring our troops home, and begin to repair our alliances around the world. And Barack will have with him a terrific partner in Michelle Obama. Anyone who saw Michelle's speech last night, no, she will be a great First Lady for America. And Americans are fortunate that Joe Biden will be at Barack Obama's side, a strong leader, a good man who understands both the economic stresses here at home and the strategic challenges abroad. He's pragmatic, he's tough, and he's wise. And Joe, of course, will be supported by his wonderful wife, Jill. They will be a great team for our country. Now, John McCain is my colleague and my friend. He has served our country with honor and courage. But we don't need four more years of the last 8 years. More economic stagnation and less affordable health care. More high gas prices and less alternative energy. More jobs getting shipped overseas and fewer jobs created here at home. More skyrocketing debt and home foreclosures and mounting bills that are crushing middle-class families. More war and less diplomacy. More of a government where the privileged few come first and everyone else comes last? Well, John McCain says the economy is fundamentally sound. John McCain doesn't think 47 million people without health insurance is a crisis. John McCain wants to privatize Social Security, and in 2008, he still thinks it's okay when women don't earn equal pay for equal work. Now, with an agenda like that, it makes perfect sense that George Bush and John McCain will be together next week in the Twin Cities, because these days they're awfully hard to tell apart. After 232 years, because we have risen to every challenge and every new time, changing to be faithful to our values of equal opportunity for all and the common good. And I know what that can mean for every man, woman, and child in America. I'm a United States Senator because in 1848, a group of courageous women and a few brave men gathered and centered days and nights to participate in the first convention on women's rights in our history. And so dawned a struggle for the right to vote that would last 72 years, handed down by mother to daughter to granddaughter and a few sons and grandsons along the way. These women and men looked into their daughters' eyes and imagined a fairer and freer world and found the strength to fight, to rally, to picket, to endure ridicule and harassment and brave violence and jail. And after so many decades, 88 years ago on this very day, the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote, became enshrined in our Constitution. My mother was born before women could vote. My daughter got to vote for her mother for president. This is the story of America, of women and men who defy the odds and never give up. So how do we give this country back to them? By following the example of a brave New Yorker, a woman who risked her lives to bring slaves to freedom along the Underground Railroad. On that path to freedom, Harriet Tubman had one piece of advice. If you hear the dogs, keep going. If you see the torches in the woods, keep going. If they're shouting after you, keep going. Don't ever stop. Keep going. If you want a taste of freedom, keep going. And even in the darkest moments, that is what Americans have done. We have found the faith to keep going. I have seen it. I have seen it in our teachers and our firefighters, our police officers, our nurses, our small business owners, and our union workers. I've seen it in the men and women of our military. In America, you always keep going. We're Americans. We're not big on quitting. And remember, before we can keep going, we've got to get going by electing Barack Obama the next president of the United States. We don't have a moment to lose or a vote to spare. Nothing less than the fate of our nation and the future of our children hangs in the balance. I want you to think about your children and grandchildren come election day. Think about the choices your parents and grandparents made that had such a big impact on your lives and on the life of our nation. We've got to ensure that the choice we make in this election honors the sacrifices of all who came before us and will fill the lives of our children with possibility and hope. That is our duty, to build that bright future, to teach our children that in America, there is no chasm too deep, no barrier too great, no ceiling too high. For all who work hard, who keep going, have faith in God, in our country, and each other, that is our mission, Democrats. Let's elect Barack Obama and Joe Biden for that future worthy of our great country.
Uhuru. This is Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have with us as a guest today, Orion Osagyefo, who is the president of AISO, the African Internationalist Student Organization. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention, and what you just heard was Hillary Clinton, a portion of Hillary Clinton's presentation. I have to admit, I just couldn't play the whole thing. I gotta admit it, man. It's difficult enough for me to sit and listen to portions of these speeches, you know. It is, man, because it's so you know, so the stuff, I mean, you're talking about white nationalism. It was a convention of white nationalism. This might as well have been a convention of the national Ku Klux Klan. It might as well have been, because this was a white nationalist convention. You know, the only difference between the two of those is, well, actually, that only difference between the two of those is that one of them would have been wearing white sheets, and this one was not. But but they both, you know, I mean, it's wow, man. I just want to say, you know, you know, about this presentation Hillary Clinton made. We didn't play it, but for like the first half of the presentation, she spent it, you know, really laying out like her resume, you know what I'm saying? Laying out like all the stuff that she's done, you know, which was interesting. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Because, you know, her task here was to try to repair the rift, you know, created inside the Democratic Party by, you know, her extended campaign that went way past the time that the verdict was already out, that it was going to be Obama who's representing the Democrats. What you think about that, comrade?
Yeah, no, it definitely, I mean, this is white nationalism and propaganda.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, this is some serious propaganda. I mean, the whole convention, the both of the conventions, is just a show, you know. They're projecting these lies onto the masses, you know. And it's just interesting that a Democrat is talking about a Republican as if they're so different or so opposed to each other. You know, they're the same. They're on the same wing of, you know, of imperialist monsters. So, you know, for Democrats and Republicans to talk like they're so different is strange, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in this particular thing, like, you know, there's a base that Hillary Clinton has, you know, inside of the Democratic Party. There's a base that she was supposed to be trying here to bring to you know, vote for Obama. There's some people who suggest that she wasn't trying hard. You know, there's some people who suggest that she doesn't want him to win even still, and that it, particularly with you know, McCain now having picked a woman as his vice president, Sarah Palin, you know, which is really taking advantage of Hillary Clinton's base attempting to do that, you know, particularly a sector of her base that may have been voting for Hillary Clinton for the purpose of you know, establishing this historical thing of a woman being the president of the United States imperialist state. You know, but her role here was supposed to be you know, bringing her base to Obama. But, you know, one thing that really got me here, Harriet Tubman, did she really do that? I mean, did she really man, pull out Harriet Tubman?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that either.
Really?
That was disturbing, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean,
and to talk about freedom and keep going, and I mean, I heard that the first time I heard that, I was just like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean,
that's
like
crazy, you know?
I mean, Harriet, are you serious? Harriet Tubman.
You know, right. I mean, like, and she talks about, you know, the you know, she's talking about keep going, you know, if you hit the dogs, keep going, you know, as if, you know, as if it wasn't the Americans who were sicking the damn dogs on Harriet Tubman and the right. Africans who were running along with her, you know, as if right. as if it wasn't Americans who were holding the torches and shouting in the woods, you know, planning to inflict the most violent kind of acts against these Africans, actions that America has historically inflicted upon African people, you know, both before and after Harriet Tubman's time. In fact, the shit still happens now, you know,
right.
It's like, that was offensive. That was really offensive.
That's the word. Yeah, that's the way I felt for a woman who's part of an imperialist, you know, political party, and whose design is to, you know, continue to suck our resources, and for her to say reference Harriet Tubman, who was a freedom fighter for African people, as if it wasn't. As if it wasn't her people, as you said, that weren't chasing us. You know, it's insane. It's insane what she did there.
She's,
and to somehow equate that to their struggle as Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, like, whatever she was trying to do.
Yeah. She switches around the legacy of America. You know, she switches around the legacy of America to make, you know, Harriet Tubman's attempt to escape the American legacy. Making her attempt to escape the actual American legacy itself, you know, when the American legacy is to enslave African people and inflict, you know, brutality, you know, I mean, violence, the worst kind of violence on African people. But this is not inconsistent, you know. This is something that you see a lot, you know, it's opportunism. You see, like, white feminists use, you know, forces like Harriet Tubman and other courageous African women who struggled against colonialism, you know, and using the examples of these forces to forge some sisterhood across these colonial lines, when the reality is that white women have lived at the expense of African women and even do that today, you know.
Right, yeah.
And we gotta
using our freedom fighters as a way to mobilize their base or whatever strategy they're trying to do, which is most likely mobilize their base and try to persuade push their argument forward.
Yeah,
you know, using our freedom fighters. I mean, I guess it's similar to I've seen a lot of activity around, you know, for instance, Momia.
Yeah,
you know, or what have you? You know, a lot of white left forces, and never quite could understand that fully. But yeah, it's definitely opportunism.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's like if Harriet Tubman was here today, she'd be running away from the damn convention. You know, not attending the thing. You know, she'd be involved in the process. If you know, looking at her legacy, she'd be involved in the process of trying to stop the thing from happening. You know, as opposed to participating in this thing. And it's just real a vile, nasty kind of opportunism. To use, you know, Harriet Tubman and forces like that, you know, to for, you know, her agenda. And I, you know, yeah, I think that's just a nasty kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, definitely. You know, it was definitely, you know, it's strategic. You know, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to mobilize their base and push their agenda. So they use you know, a woman and a black woman at that, you know, and flip it around. It's all inverse, you know, everything's upside down. And if people don't catch this stuff, it can definitely confuse the masses, you know.
Yeah.
This type of talk. Those that aren't, you know, those that are miseducated and what have you. I mean, this type of stuff is just propaganda at its highest level, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dangerous stuff. It's dangerous stuff.
It's very deceptive, you know.
Yeah, we invite you to participate in this discussion. Those of you who are listening out there, we again discussing the Democratic National Convention and you know, the different presentations that happened at there were so many of those things. You know, you look at the list of presenters over the 4 days, and it's just like ridiculous, you know, how many people they had speaking. We're just talking about a few of the presentations. Well, I mean, we're talking about the whole thing, but we're playing a few clips from a few of those, the main presentations that were made. I want to invite you all to participate in this discussion. You can call a U.S. number that's 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. You can call our U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. Or you can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. And you know, Orion, you saw even in her presentation, we may not have played a clip from that, but again, you know, this common thread, you know, that we gotta make America, you know, what America used to be. We gotta restore it to, you know, to running things in the world, you know, to being the top dog in the world. And the reality is what they're saying is that they have to restore America's grip on everybody's resources, you know. And that's at the expense of African people and other colonized peoples around the world and inside of the U.S.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we got to do it through a black man. It's neocolonialism, you know.
Yeah, it is.
That's what they really mean. You hear them. I mean, you hear them on CNN and all these other propaganda machines talking about the actual. So you'll actually hear them admit that there's a crisis.
Yeah,
they have to get, you know, an energy crisis or what have you. I mean, all these things are caused because oppressed peoples are putting up a fierce resistance to imperialist aggression. You know.
Yeah.
So, when they talk about restoring the face of America and what have you, and trying to paint it in this nice homey picture of, you know, patriotism or what have you, it's really destruction and horror for colonized peoples around the world. You know, they want to bolster their military power, and who better than a black man, you know, to do that, or a woman if she was to win, you know. It really shows the crisis that imperialism is in, and they're gonna, I mean, they're dying, so I mean, they're gonna fight to save on, you know, to hold on to every last breath that they have.
Yeah.
And this is a strategy on their part, by the way, you know, to have a black man, project a black man as a candidate in such a white nationalist nation, you know, that was built off of our enslavement and our continuing, you know, exploitation and oppression. It's definitely shows the crisis that they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, as the thing is falling, they'll give you a piece of the action. They give you a piece of the action if they think that it'll save them. You know, it'll save this thing for them. I was talking with Chairman Amalia Shetela on a couple of days ago, and he was likening it to like the Titanic, you know, how, you know, the Titanic's in this place where the Titanic was this big ship, for those who are unaware, you know, this luxury liner that sank, you know, it was this thing where, you know, everybody was excited about getting on the Titanic, you know, but this thing sank in the middle of the ocean, and most everybody who was on the thing died. But you had people rushing to try to get on this boat, you know, on this Titanic, you know, and the U.S. right now is like the Titanic, you know, except people don't know that there's a hole in the boat. Like on the Titanic, you know, even after the hole, this huge hole was knocked in the boat that was responsible for it sinking. You had people who were on the deck who were dancing around and stuff, not even realizing that they're about to die. You know, and the U.S. is like the Titanic. You have this case where everybody's, you know, running around acting like everything's cool, you know, you know, this thing is about to go down. And the thing is, as the Titanic was going down, I'm sure there was nobody who was fighting to be the captain. You know what I'm saying? You know, nobody fighting to be the captain as the thing went down. You know, and the U.S. is really in this place right now where you know, it's like the Titanic has got this huge hole in it, and people ain't aware yet, you know. And so you got these people fighting to be the captain. You got Negroes who are really fighting to get on the ship, and, you know, not realizing that if they get on the ship, they ain't gonna be nothing but cooks and servants any damn way. And they ain't gonna be able to get off the thing if it falls, if it falls, you know, when it falls, not if, because it's got this big ass hole in it, you know, this big hole in it, you know. But it's like the Titanic, and they're unaware, you know, the a lot of folk are unaware that the thing is going down. But as it starts to gather the water, you know, folks begin to realize, ooh, you know, we need to get off this ship. And what we're saying right now is you don't have to wait till the water starts rushing in. You can see that this joker is on his way out. You know, the fact that everybody at this convention and everybody in the Republican National Convention, I'm sure, is going to be talking about the same thing, trying to fix America, trying to restore it, you know, trying to bring it back to its former glory. Of course, its former glory was something that was at the expense of the rest of us, you know. But it's an indication that there's a hole in the ship, you know, it would be a good idea to get off of the thing now.
I'm saying that's a powerful metaphor. I think that definitely makes it clear to those that weren't clear on the state of America, you know, what's really going on. And it, you know, obviously the chairman, you know, I think that's an excellent metaphor on his part to explain America to as the great ship, you know.
Yeah.
That everybody wants to get into America, what have you, you know, chasing their own resources, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, this magnificent spectacle, but it's dying, you know? And
yeah.
And I think that's amazing, a powerful metaphor. And we see, you know, petty bourgeois Africans like Barack Obama or what have you that are trying to get onto a dying ship, you know?
Yeah.
And whether they know it or not, you know? And, see, I mean, they're, you know, you got those, I mean, there's difference. You got petty bourgeois Africans that could hold up their fist and say black power and what have you, but their version of black power is totally different from what you and me mean by black power. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're talking about coming on top of and being the ruling class, you know?
Yeah.
And we're talking about getting rid of this whole capitalistic, imperialistic system, you know?
Yeah.
But they want to get on top of it, you know? And that's another thing right there, too, you know? Black power to someone may be something totally different to what, you know, the Uhuru movement and what we're talking about when we say, you know, self-determination and black power, you know?
Yeah. But the thing is, it should be clear, you know? Because the thing is, black power obviously means power in the hands of African people. I guess it is a bit vague too, but the thing is, because in some countries, you know, particularly in Africa, you have power in the hands of somebody black, and you have forces who are trying to put power in the hands of somebody black now. But even then, that's not power. That's just him being you know, the head representative of this thing, you know. But mm-hmm. The power is still in the people who the forces who gave him the millions of dollars, you know, right. to win this thing. But yeah, it's and the thing
we need power to the people.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. The African working class has to have power for ourselves. And you know, you ain't gonna be able to get that on no ballot. It's never been on one. Never been on one. I want to take a break here. We're gonna come back with more here on Africa Live on NahuaRadio.com. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. Stay tuned.
shit, homie. Liberated, we got the beats. Only the people can make a real revolution, so that's who we serve. All these ass kissing Uncle Tom, niggas got no concern. We got nothing to gain off this plantation, but making it burn. Mr. Taylor destroyed everything, they schools was making us learn. He told us crack is living good off our wealth, they didn't earn. That's why they shoot you in the back as soon as you start making a turn.
On them, as we walk towards Africa,
we stay disciplined 24/7, cause crack is a setting up trap for us. We don't slip when them pretty face dimes throw ass at us. We're taking a stride, even the baddest chicken where we're wired. You got Asians approaching you from every angle, trying to get you tangled and twisted. But everything we do stay explicit. Mistake, we'll try to say we trafficking drugs, taking our right to have the gun. We still goombas, get all our sons and daughters, cause they the future, so they can shoot you today. Another generation to rise from the roots like Houston. We've been through the worst torture up in Harlem, in Haiti, in London, in Mother Africa. We all starving, so we all brawling. In revolution, we gon' spark it. We reach farther and keep dropping science till we martyrs. To live and die for the people, we be honored. The struggle might be hard, but we are. That's why we saw.
Living this life as a rebel. Johnson was 92 at the time of the cops' arrival. If you living in black, survival ain't an item. You got a right to, that's right, dude. You have some sense, you wanna stand up and fight too. Surprise you, mess around and get an example made out of you. Mind your own business and them cops make you a pinata. See a lot of dudes get shook up and get the slackest.
Uhuru and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And we've got with us Odion Osagyefo, Uhuru comrade.
Uhuru.
And so we've been talking about the Democratic National Convention that just happened over this week. For you, I have painstakingly gone through listening to various presentations. And I do mean painstakingly. It's difficult to listen to this stuff. It's just so. I mean, white nationalism is just serious. It's serious, you know. But you know, we did it, and we are inviting you to participate in the discussion that we're having here. We are, we can be reached through our U.S. number, the 727-565-1599, and that's country code 001, or you can call us through our U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629, that's country code 44. You can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, that's all one word, all lowercase, and you can call from anywhere in the African world. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. I know some folks are phone shy. I used to be phone shy. But anyway, we're talking about the Democratic National Convention. And we listened to clips from both Michelle Obama's presentation on the first day, Hillary Clinton's presentation on the second day. Now we're looking at some of the stuff from the third day, including presentation made by Bill Clinton. Now, Odion, this is funny, man, because the Clintons did some dirty stuff in this in this primary. You know, they talked a lot about, well, this guy has no experience, and how would you put America in the hands of a guy with no experience, you know? And of course, one of the things that they meant by that was, this guy was a slave just yesterday. Mm-hmm. you can't put the future of America in the hands of a slave. What are you doing? You know? Mm-hmm.
That's
what it really sounds. Yeah. And, so it's interesting to see how now, coming to the Democratic National Convention, how they got to try to figure out a way to, like, turn around all the things that they said about this guy. Because they were mobilizing some serious white nationalist, feelings, you know, directed at this guy, you know. So it's interesting. I want to play this clip, though, from Bill Clinton in the presentation that he made in attempting to warm that stuff over and bring those folk to Barack Obama.
Look at the example the Republicans have set. In this decade, American workers have consistently given us rising productivity. That means year after year, they work harder and produce more. Now, what did they get in return? Declining wages, less than one-fourth as many new jobs as in the previous 8 years, smaller health care and pension benefits, rising poverty, and the biggest increase in income inequality since the 1920s. Last night, Hillary told us in no uncertain terms that she is going to do everything she can to elect Barack Obama. That makes two of us. Actually, that makes 18 million of us. Because, like Hillary, I want all of you who supported her to vote for Barack Obama in November. Here's why. And I have the privilege of speaking here, thanks to you, from a perspective that no other American Democrat except President Carter can offer. Our nation is in trouble on two fronts. The American dream is under siege at home, and America's leadership in the world has been weakened. Middle-class and low-income Americans are hurting, with incomes declining, job losses, poverty and inequality rising, mortgage foreclosures and credit card debt increasing, health care coverage disappearing, and a very big spike in the cost of food, utilities, and gasoline. And our position in the world has been weakened by too much unilateralism and too little cooperation. By a perilous dependence on imported oil, by a refusal to lead on global warming, by a growing indebtedness and a dependence on foreign lenders, by a severely burdened military, by a backsliding on global nonproliferation and arms control agreements, and by a failure to consistently use the power of diplomacy, from the Middle East to Africa to Latin America to Central and Eastern Europe. Clearly, the job of the next president is to rebuild the American dream and to restore American leadership in the world. And here's what I have to say about that. Everything I learned in my 8 years as president and in the work I have done since in America and across the globe has convinced me that Barack Obama is the man for this job. Now, he has a remarkable ability to inspire people, to raise our hopes and rally us to high purpose. He has the intelligence and curiosity every successful president needs. His policies on the economy, on taxes, on health care, on energy are far superior to the Republican alternatives. He has shown a clear grasp of foreign policy and national security challenges and a firm commitment to rebuild our badly strained military. His family heritage and his life experiences have given him a unique capacity to lead our increasingly diverse nation in an ever more interdependent world. The long, hard primary tested and strengthened him. And in his first presidential decision, the selection of a running mate, he hit it out of the park. With Joe Biden's experience and wisdom, supporting Barack Obama's proven understanding, instincts, and insight, America will have the national security leadership we need. And so, my fellow Democrats, I say to you, Barack Obama is ready to lead America and to restore American leadership in the world. Barack Obama is ready to honor the oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Barack Obama is ready to be President of the United States. As president, he will work for an America with more partners and fewer adversaries. He will rebuild our frayed alliances and revitalize the international institutions which help to share the cost of the world's problems and to leverage the power of our influence. He will put us back in the forefront of the world's fight against global warming and the fight to reduce nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. He will continue and enhance our nation's commendable global leadership in an area in which I am deeply involved, the fight against AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, including, and this is very important, a renewal of the battle against HIV and AIDS here at home. A President Obama will choose diplomacy first and military force as a last resort. But in a world troubled by terror, by trafficking in weapons, drugs, and people, by human rights abuses of the most awful kind, by other threats to our security, our interests, and our values, when he cannot convert adversaries into partners, he will stand up to them.
That was Bill Clinton at the Democratic National Convention. This is Africa Live on HuraRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. We've got with us Odion Osagyefo. And we're talking about the Democratic National Conference. Anyway, that big collection of Democrats. Anyway, where they the nomination of Barack Obama, the nomination was made official. That presentation you were just listening to was Bill Clinton. It was a clip of it. And again, you see this, you know, this common thing popping up. We've got to fix America's face around the world. You know, that whole thing. You know what I'm saying? They really got to fix that thing. You know, they are experiencing this crisis in a serious kind of way. They really got to fix it. And but it's funny because Clinton, you know, he was talking like he was so convinced of Obama's ability to be the president. You know, when only just a few months ago, he was so convinced that Obama could not be the president. You know, it's just an interesting thing to see them kind of have to turn around completely. Imperialist politics is funny.
Yeah, Clinton, man, I don't know. You know, I'll let the facts speak for themselves, but let's just say he's not being honest. Man, that was this is an exciting time for revolutionaries. I can tell you that much because America is in trouble.
Yeah, it is.
And you just need to listen to the ruling class and hear the way they're speaking. You know that this thing's on the way out.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I mean Clinton though, the comments that he was making before,
yeah,
about Obama, and all of a sudden now. Obama's the right man for the task, you know. I mean, it just shows, you know, it highlights his credibility as an individual alone, you know.
Yeah.
And what have you. But, I mean, it's more than that, though, what he was saying in regard, you know, he was giving details in regards to, you know, the economic situation of America and what have you and their place in the world. This thing's dying. This thing's definitely on the way out, and you know, just from the analysis that he gave, you know, they put it in different terms. They say we have to restore our glory in the world or what have you, but it's at the expense of other peoples, right?
Yeah, it is. Peoples.
So they leave that part out.
Oh yeah,
you know they leave that the most important part out. That you know,
yeah,
you know, they fail to see that. That's their limitation. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they see it. They see it. But they won't. They. but they can't say it.
Let me correct myself on that. They won't say it. They see it though. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. What oftentimes they're not able to see is the fact that it ain't no saving this thing. There is no saving this thing. It is done. You know, you can't patch up that big old hole in the Titanic. It's sinking. And
impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And the best
I guess it's their arrogance, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It is.
They really think that they can save it. I mean, that's so you know, everything's in continuous change. So this thing is going to change. It's going to go out. And there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's funny, though, because Clinton, you know, he talked before about how Obama's not ready to be the president and all that stuff. And but you look at the policies that Obama's talking about and some of the things that he's talking about doing are similar to the things that that Clinton did when he was in office. One is putting a bunch more police on the street, you know, to brutalize and murder African people, cutting out, you know, programs like welfare. You know, Obama's talking about cutting out, you know, programs that don't work, you know, and what that generally means, cutting out programs for like welfare and things like that. But, you know, and his running mate, Joe Biden, talked about it a bit in the presentation that he made. I want to play a little clip from that because this one is interesting too, because you hear in his presentation again, you know, the whole thing about, you know, the American dream is slipping, you know, slipping out of our fingers, you know, and Barack Obama is going to restore that American dream. You know, of course, the American dream is an African nightmare, you know. But here's a clip from Joe Biden's presentation.
Barack will put more cops on the street, put security back in Social Security, and he'll never, ever, ever give up until we achieve equal pay for women. That's the change we need. And as we gather here tonight, our country is less secure and more isolated than it has been any time in recent history. The Bush foreign policy has dug us into a very deep hole with very few friends to help us climb out. And for the last 7 years, the administration has failed to face the biggest forces shaping this century. The emergence of Russia, China, and India as great powers, the spread of lethal weapons, the shortage of secure supplies of energy, food, and water, the challenge of climate change, and the resurgence of fundamentalism in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the real central front in the war on terror. Ladies and gentlemen, recent years and in recent days, we've once again seen the consequences of the neglect, of this neglect, with Russia challenging the very freedom of a new democratic country of Georgia. Barack and I will end that neglect. We will hold Russia accountable for its actions, and we will help the people of Georgia rebuild. I've been on the ground in Georgia, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and I can tell you in no uncertain terms, this administration's policy has been an abysmal failure. America cannot afford 4 more years of this failure. And now, despite being complicit in this catastrophic foreign policy, John McCain says, Barack Obama is not ready to protect our national security. Now let me ask you this. Whose judgment do you trust? Should you trust the judgment of John McCain when he said only 3 years ago, Afghanistan, we don't read about it anymore in the papers because it succeeded? Or should you believe Barack Obama, who said a year ago, we need to send 2 more combat battalions to Afghanistan? The fact of the matter is, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, the people who actually attacked us on 9/11, they've regrouped in the mountains between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and they are plotting new attacks. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has echoed Barack's call for more troops. John McCain was wrong, and Barack Obama was right. Should we trust John McCain's judgment when he rejected talking with Iran and then asked, what is there to talk about? Or Barack Obama, who said, we must talk and make clear to Iran that it must change? Now, after 7 years of denial, even the Bush administration recognizes that we should talk to Iran because that's the best way to ensure our security. Again and again, John McCain has been wrong and Barack Obama is right. Should we trust John McCain's judgment when he says we can't have no timelines to draw down our troops from Iraq, that we must stay indefinitely? Or should we listen to Barack Obama, who says shift the responsibility to the Iraqis and set a time to bring our combat troops home? Now, after 6 long years, the administration and the Iraqi government are on the verge of setting a date to bring our troops home. John McCain was wrong, and Barack Obama was right. Again, and again, on the most important national security issues of our time, John McCain was wrong, and Barack Obama has been proven right. Folks, remember when the world used to trust us, when they looked to us for leadership? With Barack Obama as our president, they'll look at us again, they'll trust us again, and we'll be able to lead again. Folks, Jill and I are truly honored to join Michelle and Barack on this journey. When I look at their young children, when I look at my grandchildren, I know why I'm here. I'm here for their future. I'm here for everyone I grew up with in Scranton and Wilmington. I'm here for the cops and the firefighters, the teachers and the assembly line workers, the folks whose lives are the very measure of whether the American dream endures. Our greatest presidents, from Abraham Lincoln to Franklin Roosevelt to John Kennedy, they all challenged us to embrace change. Now it is our responsibility to meet that challenge. Millions of Americans have been knocked down. And this is the time, as Americans together, we get back up together. Our debt to our parents and our grandparents is too great. Our obligation to our children is too sacred. These are extraordinary times. This is an extraordinary election. The American people are ready. I am ready. Barack is ready. This is his time. This is our time. This is America's time. God bless America, and may God protect our troops. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Uhuru, this is Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we are covering the Democratic National Convention. What you just heard was a clip of a presentation made by Joe Biden, who is Barack Obama's running mate. Orion, that was some interesting stuff, wasn't it?
Man.
You know what? Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. That was torture to listen to, but we're definitely we're gonna struggle through that one.
Yeah, it's, you know, a couple of things I noted there. He talked about the fact that one, that Barack Obama's planning on sending more police into the streets in the U.S., which means more are these troops dare to murder African people, and that's what they do. There's a policy throughout the U.S. of police containment against the African community, where they brutalize and murder African people, you know, to keep us in place, to maintain this relationship, you know, where all of our resources, all of our work, all of our wealth goes to build for white power and white people. The other thing he talked about is that Barack Obama's talking about sending more military to Afghanistan. You know, this is not a guy who, you know, who's trying to make peace in the world. This guy who's striking out with more war against colonized peoples to control, you know, their resources. Other thing that was real funny. You remember when America used to trust, when people used to trust America? They can trust us again with Barack Obama.
Man.
That stuff, man. That stuff. But, you know, that's the thing, you know. They can trust us again because we got a face that looks like them, you know. So we can use that to make them trust us, you know. That's one of the main purposes of Barack Obama's candidacy, you know.
Right.
To be able to change the view of America around the world, right. Make people,
I mean,
trust
him. He's a front for white power.
Yeah, yes.
And you know they can deal. You see, like they're on the way out, so they know that this is why they projected Barack Obama, you know, as a strategy. They can deal with that type of change because they're just trying to save themselves, you know.
Yeah,
but. It shows the desperation, though, you know, that they have to put forth a black man as president.
Yeah.
And, you know, Joe Biden was talking about terror. This guy wants to impose terror on the streets of America through the more police and terror abroad, you know.
Yeah.
And yet he claims to be about change and what have you. I mean, it's there's so many contradictions in and on what they're saying, you know.
Yeah.
His candidacy is just—it's a strange phenomenon, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys are the terrorists. They're running to be the head of the
terrorist state of the U.S., you know, and that's exactly what it is. It's the government commits more terrorism around the world than anybody, you know. But here's the thing. Well, we got a couple emails in. One is from Aisha, who says, "Uhuru, I am outraged at the fact that the struggles of African people to free ourselves from the attack made on our people from the United States government are now being used to pitch to African people that we should once again put our faith and energy into solving the crisis that this very same U.S. government is faced with. And away from continuing the struggle for self-determination for ourselves. Hillary Clinton is carrying on the white nationalist tradition of using the struggle of African people to forward the agenda of white people. African people work, white folk get rich, African people struggle and die. White people get to use the reform made as a consequence of that to somehow speak to their humanity. Thank you, Africa Live, for summing this up for our people." Thank you.
That was a good summation, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for your email, Sister Aisha. She was talking about Hillary Clinton's presentation, particularly the statement about Harriet Tubman, the use of Harriet Tubman as some example of Americans, you know, continuing to go on even when it's hard, when the reality is, like we said before, Harriet Tubman was a victim of America, a victim of Americanism, you know. And we've got another email in also, though. This one is from Trigger, who says, "I find it particularly significant that in Obama, Clinton, and other imperialists have set the task of converting America's adversaries into allies, and those he cannot convert, he will stand up to. This is AFRICOM in Africa, the Merida plan in Latin America, and the public policy of police containment in the U.S. All strategies of imperialism that seek to use neocolonial forces to carry out the attacks on oppressed people's struggle against colonialism, and that will, in the final analysis, use brute military force against oppressed people who dare to want to control their lives and resources. These are both imperialist strategies that Obama has openly supported throughout his campaign." And that's right on. That's right on. You got anything to say about that, Orion?
Yeah, that's definitely right on. That's definitely a strategy. Neocolonialism, you know, Nkrumah said, is the last stage of imperialism. That's exactly what it's speaking to, converting the enemies into allies, using a black face to do it, or what have you. But I think the comment before as well, the email by Aisha as well, summed up the situation as well, with the opportunism of Hillary Clinton and others to use, you know, black freedom fighters as a way to push their own agenda as imperialists, you know. So definitely the revolution, I mean, the real change we know is through the revolution and through self-determination. That's real change.
Yeah.
Not whatever change that Barack Obama's candidacy claims to have. That's not change. It's more of the same. They're the reactionaries, you know. You know, they're the reactionaries. And we're the revolutionaries. We're the ones that bring change. And we're talking about changing our circumstances here on this earth and being self-determinant, you know, and controlling our own resources and having our own power, power to the people, the masses of African people.
Yeah.
So that's real change. And I think that, you know, everyone needs to understand that Barack Obama is not change. He's more of the same. His party is the same. They're all reactionaries. They actually oppose change, real change. That's what they do. That's their job, you know, because they're trying to stay alive as a class and as a people, but they're dying, you know.
Yeah.
And U.S. Western imperialism is dying. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're the real change, and you know, the African People's Socialist Party is definitely the party that's responsible for the real change here in the U.S. So.
Yeah, that's important, you know, because we got to understand, you know, that Democratic and Republican parties, you know, you keep bouncing between the two of them and you continue to be in the place where we are right now, colonized, you know, oppressed and exploited, you know, and it requires us to have a different solution. Because those parties are attempting to solve the crisis for white power. Of course, solving the crisis for white power means, you know, problems for African people and other people around the world. We got to be opposed to that. We got to be opposed to them being able to solve their crisis, you know, at our expense. And that means being opposed to the Obama campaign, the McCain campaign. That means being opposed to U.S. imperialism. Anybody who's trying to solve the crisis of imperialism is working against the interests of the African working class and poor peasants. You know, we don't have a lot of time left. I do want to play a short clip from Obama's speech. You know, there was so much that I wanted to deal with in this speech that this guy made. you know, we'll just play a short clip of it and talk a bit about, you know, some of the things that he said.
And just as we keep our promise to the next generation here at home, so must we keep America's promise abroad. If John McCain wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have. For while Senator McCain was turning his sights to Iraq, just days after 9/11, I stood up and opposed this war, knowing that it would distract us from the real threats that we face. When John McCain said we could just muddle through in Afghanistan, I argued for more resources and more troops to finish the fight against the terrorists who actually attacked us on 9/11, and made clear that we must take out Osama bin Laden and his lieutenants if we have them in our sights. You know, John McCain likes to say that he'll follow bin Laden to the gates of hell, but he won't even follow him to the cave where he lives. And today, as my call for a time frame to remove our troops from Iraq has been echoed by the Iraqi government and even the Bush administration, even after we learned that Iraq has $79 billion in surplus while we are wallowing in deficit, John McCain stands alone in his stubborn refusal to end a misguided war. That's not the judgment we need. That won't keep America safe. We need a president who can face the threats of the future, not keep grasping at the ideas of the past. You don't defeat a terrorist network that operates in 80 countries by occupying Iraq. You don't protect Israel and deter Iran just by talking tough in Washington. You can't truly stand up for Georgia when you've strained our oldest alliances. If John McCain wants to follow George Bush with more tough talk and bad strategy, that is his choice, but that is not the change that America needs. We are the party of Roosevelt. We are the party of Kennedy. So don't tell me the Democrats won't defend this country. Don't tell me the Democrats won't keep us safe. The Bush-McCain foreign policy has squandered the legacy that generations of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, have built. And we are here to restore that legacy. As Commander-in-Chief, I will never hesitate to defend this nation, but I will only send our troops into harm's way with a clear mission and a sacred commitment to give them the equipment they need in battle and the care and benefits they deserve when they come home. I will end this war in Iraq responsibly and finish the fight against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. I will rebuild our military to meet future conflicts, but I will also renew the tough, direct diplomacy that can prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons and curb Russian aggression. I will build new partnerships to defeat the threats of the 21st century: terrorism and nuclear proliferation, poverty and genocide, climate change and disease. The times are too serious. The stakes are too high for this same partisan playbook. So let us agree that patriotism has no party. I love this country, and so do you, and so does John McCain. The men and women who serve in our battlefields may be Democrats and Republicans and independents, but they have fought together and bled together, and some died together under the same proud flag. They have not served a red America or a blue America. They have served the United States of America. That promise is our greatest inheritance. It's a promise I make to my daughters when I tuck them in at night, and a promise that you make to yours, a promise that has led immigrants to cross oceans and pioneers to travel west, a promise that led workers to picket lines and women to reach for the ballot. And it is that promise that 45 years ago today brought Americans from every corner of this land to stand together on a mall in Washington before Lincoln's memorial and hear a young preacher from Georgia speak of his dream. The men and women who gathered there could have heard many things. They could have heard words of anger and discord. They could have been told to succumb to the fear and frustrations of so many dreams deferred. But what the people heard instead, people of every creed and color, from every walk of life, is that in America, our destiny is inextricably linked, that together our dreams can be won. We cannot walk alone, the preacher cried. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. America, we cannot turn back. Not with so much work to be done, not with so many children to educate and so many veterans to care for, not with an economy to fix and cities to rebuild and farms to save, not with so many families to protect and so many lives to mend. America, we cannot turn back. We cannot walk alone. At this moment, in this election, we must pledge once more to march into the future. Let us keep that promise, that American promise, and in the words of Scripture, hold firmly, without wavering, to the hope that we confess. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
This is Africa Live on AhuaRadio.com. I'm your host, Nibinga Zimbabwe, and we have a guest with us, Odion Osagyefo, who is the president of the African Internationalist Student Organization. We're talking about the Democratic National Conference, which
And what you just heard was a clip of a couple of clips of presentation made by Barack Obama on Thursday at the Democratic the DNC. And Odeon, listen to this thing. I mean, this guy's really a patriot. You know, he is really a patriot, you know. And the thing to note is that a U.S. patriot is a white nationalist, you know.
Right.
A U.S. patriot is a white nationalist. And because the thing is, the U.S., America exists on the back of Africans and indigenous people whose land was stolen, who find themselves in concentration camps called reservations even today. But this guy is a patriot. You know, he's talking about waging war all around the world to protect the interests of U.S. imperialism. He's spoken to the interest in this presentation. He spoke to the interest of Israel. He spoke in the presentation. You didn't hear the whole presentation here, but in his whole presentation, he spoke to the interest of homosexuals. He spoke to the interest of feminists. He spoke to the interest of folks who opposed immigration. You know, but he did not at any point in this thing speak to the interest of African people. He even took advantage, you know, of the march that King led, you know, in the 60s. On the same date, you know, he took advantage of that, you know, for his interest. But still, even with that, couldn't speak to the interest of African people. King spoke to the interest of African people, even if you know, it was a liberal kind of agenda. He at least spoke to the interest of African people, you know. But this guy won't even do that.
Right. Right, he refuses to do that. I mean, the guy, if I didn't know he was black, I would think he's, you know, some reaction to old white guy, you know? He sounds just like them, you know? It's white nationalism.
Yeah.
And he's talking about some very disturbing things, you know, domestically and abroad.
Yeah,
and it's more the same violence and this culture of violence that America lives off of. So he's, you know, this man is, and I unite with that. King at least spoke to the interests of the, you know, to Africans, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we even know actually later on in his life before he died that he was actually more coming around to, you know, realizing who he was really dealing with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've seen at least he spoke to the interest. Obama consistently and systematically attacks African people.
Yeah, he does.
You know, that whole thing on Father's Day was ridiculous, you know.
And he did it again in this presentation.
Yeah, he did it again. I mean, this guy, he systematically, you know, like, make no bones about it. He knows what he's consciously doing this. He is because he's a U.S. patriot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is really his worldview. And, it's just some of the things that he said in the past, I don't know how many years it's been, probably a year or two, is systematically attacking African people, not speaking to the terrorism of the U.S. state and what have you. And obviously he's not going, he's aspiring to lead it, you know?
Yeah,
and this is what I mean by he liquidates the national liberation of African people and our self-determination. So I can't get down with that at all, and none of us should get down to it. And we need to expose that and counter that and fight that with all our abilities, you know, because he's talking about some serious things, you know, some he's talking about inflicting horror and pain and destruction around the world. So
yeah,
that's a no-go.
Yeah, and not only, and you say he liquidates the national liberation struggle of African people, but not only that, he liquidates the national existence, the existence of a national identity of African people. Yeah, he liquidates even the idea that there's a Black America. He said, "Ain't no Black America." You know, it's just one America. You know, he liquidates that whole thing, so you can't even be you can't even be a Black person in America. You just, you know, something, but you ain't Black, you know, and you damn sure ain't an African, you know, and you have no interest to be spoken to. The Jews do. The Jews have an interest to be spoken to, and various other groups do, but you don't, you know, and it's because, you know, he's pandering to the interest of white power. He's not only just pandering, he's representing the interest of white power, and that is the interest that is opposed to you. In fact, the only thing he says about you is attacks against you. And he said, you know, even in what he's talked about in terms of policies and stuff, he's said that he's going to wage attacks on you. He says, you know, putting all these police on the streets, you know, thousands more police on the streets, and that ain't to lock up white kids, you know, despite the fact that most of the drug use and sales happen in the white community. Them police will not be attacking white folk. In fact, they'll continue the same trajectory. They'll continue the same thing in containing the African community. And when he says he's going to put all these more police in the street, he's talking to white folks, saying, "Don't worry, you know, I got the Negroes. I got them. I'm going to keep them in place. I'm going to keep them in check." You know, he's also supported legislation to deepen, you know, the counterinsurgent attacks on African people, including like the wiretaps and things like that. You know, he supported that type of stuff, you know, to you know, protect white power. And that's the thing, you know, when you're talking about somebody who's running for the president, this thing, they are trying to protect white power. That's what that's the only way you're going to become president in this country, is to protect the interests of white power. And Obama has stated emphatically, you know, his willingness, his dedication to do that. Of course, just like some of y'all out there, some of y'all Africans think that Barack Obama has a hidden agenda, so do some white folk. some white folk think that he's got a hidden agenda to come up there and represent y'all at some point. Because the thing is, like we said before, you know, there's a real historical legacy of this thing that they call racism, which is just the ideological justification of imperialist domination of peoples around the world, including Africans and other colonized peoples in the U.S. And so, you know, they have this real obstacle to overcome with white folks. And you see, like, you would think that, you know, that the poll, you see, the polls show Barack Obama and this guy McCain neck and neck. But you would think that that Barack Obama would be, you know, blasting past this guy. Considering the fact that Bush's rating, his poll rating in this country was like 19% at some point recently, you know, and the Republican rating has been extremely low too. But they will support this guy McCain to not let no Negro get in the presidency, because there's this real legacy of this ideological justification they call racism. So,
most definitely. And this phenomenon of Barack Obama, I mean, it's important just on the campus level and what AISO has been experiencing. You know, there's a lot of young people that are sucking this up. And it's important, it's important that our existence is on these campuses to contend with this, because obviously the propaganda machine is is doing his work on the young folk, you know?
And, yeah.
That's why it's definitely important that we put out the right on this and expose Obama for who he really is, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a U.S. patriot that, you know, and you gotta, it's almost like, you know, everything, you gotta retell the whole history of America for these people to understand, like, what's really going on, you know, what's really up with, you know, why our situation is the way it is today, you know, because they continue to extract our labor and our resources, you know?
Yeah.
And so, clearly some people forget that, but there's, you know, Obama, man, he's a, I don't think he's, I mean, I don't quote me, but apparently he's struggling to win the white working class, right? Like you said, right?
Yeah.
And if he was, his polls are not that far away from McCain. I mean, he's not pulling ahead. They're very close. And the white nationalism or the anti-Africanism in the United States is so strong that, you know, he's probably not even going to win the white working class or whoever is struggling to get. Because, the white nationalism is so heavy.
Yeah, I don't think Obama will win. But the thing is, whether Obama wins or not, African people, we got to understand that that this is a sinking ship. And what we got to do is get off this ship. We got to be involved in the process for real change, and real change means overturn this parasitic relationship that U.S. and European imperialism has with African people and other colonized peoples around the world. We got to join revolution.